This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning and welcome to AM. I'm Kim Landers. On the program today, more grim records. December, now America's deadliest month in the pandemic. We'll hear from a doctor in LA, which is a major hotspot for the virus, while in the UK, another daily record for new cases is set. And giving them a chance, we'll hear the case for raising the age that foster children leave care.
So I had until I was 18 to be moved out. At that time, I remember thinking, where am I going to live? Who am I going to live with? How am I going to live?
While the number of new cases in Sydney's Northern Beaches COVID cluster has been in single digits for days, there remains concern about the threat of a wider outbreak. New South Wales health authorities are investigating a number of cases which have not been linked to the Northern Beaches cluster. There's a particular focus on Wollongong, south of Sydney, where alerts have been issued for churches and shopping centres. Reporter Barbara Miller joins me now. And Barbara, what do we know about this case linked to Wollongong?
We know that the person who has tested positive visited on Sunday, just this past Sunday, two Greek Orthodox churches in the city. Anyone who also visited those churches at those times has been urged to test, self-isolate and wait to be contacted by authorities. They also visited a number of shops, including in the suburb of Figtree. And the shopping centre there, this was in the days before Christmas. Now, Figtree will be the site of a new pop-up clinic because of this concern around Wollongong. It'll be in the community hall and is opening this morning. We did see long lines in Wollongong in response to this news of a positive case in the city. The Lord Mayor, Gordon Bradbury, says that's encouraging, but he's, of course, concerned about how the next few days will play out.
I'm very disappointed in as much as the city was, relatively speaking, COVID-free. But, with the tracing setup that's been put in place, at least we know where they've been. And now the local residents, anyway, have the opportunity to go and get tested. There'll probably be about five testing stations set up in around the suburbs of Figtree, Balgownie and the centre of Wollongong. So hopefully we'll get on the top of it. What I'm more concerned about is also the fact that this is summer season. We've got 17 beaches in our city. They're all patrolled, and that attracts a lot of people from out of the city as well. So hopefully this will put the brakes on and encourage people to be a bit more cautious and reflective on their travels and their movements.
And Wollongong Council has cancelled a planned light show for New Year's Eve. They had already cancelled fireworks, but now they've cancelled this other event because of this case.
So, Barbara, beyond Wollongong, there's concern about other cases outside of the Northern Beaches cluster. What's the picture there?
The picture is unclear. There are a number of cases where the origin is not clear, and that is worrying authorities as they try and investigate those. The message from the Premier is very much, please go and get tested. There were about 16,000 people got tested in the previous 24-hour period. That's not enough. Gladys Berejiklian says she wants to see between 20 and 30,000 people getting tested if they're to get on top of this.
That's our reporter, Barbara Miller. Well, in other parts of the world, the devastation and despair from the coronavirus pandemic is deepening. December has become the deadliest month in the United States. More than 65,000 Americans have died in the past 29 days. New infections are now falling in most parts of the country, but health officials hold grave fears about the month ahead because millions of people are still travelling for the Christmas holidays. North America correspondent Catherine Diss prepared this report.
I kept telling him over and over again, you know, your wife is here, your sons are here and they love you.
Each day, nurses like Austin Stallings comfort a coronavirus patient through their final moments.
And I was the one that was holding his hand while he died and not his family.
And each day, the number of hospital beds filled with a COVID-19 patient grows. More than 120,000 Americans are receiving hospital treatment. Intensive care units are nearing capacity, and field hospitals are being built in car parks.
This morning, Los Angeles on the brink. In just days, LA County expected to surpass 10,000 deaths related to COVID-19.
In Los Angeles, deaths have jumped sixfold since November. The county's health director is Barbara Ferrer.
On average, 9 to 10 people in LA County test positive for COVID-19 every minute.
One of America's vital lines of defense, the coronavirus vaccine, is being rolled out, but skepticism remains.
Okay, let's do it.
So, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris became the second high-profile person from an ethnic minority background to get the vaccine live on air.
That was easy. Thank you. I barely felt it. Literally, this is about saving lives. It's literally about saving lives. I trust the scientists, and it is the scientists who created and approved this vaccine.
But big problems remain too with rollout speed. Just 2.1 million Americans have so far been vaccinated. The Trump administration had promised 10 times that number by this point. Dr. Ashish Jha from Brown University.
The biggest problem is getting the vaccines from the states into people's arms. There's a lot of steps, and there just hasn't been much planning. There hasn't been much investment.
It will take time to vaccinate enough Americans to bring the pandemic under control. And with the US now closing in on 20 million cases and more than 330,000 deaths, health officials are fearing an even darker January awaits. This is Catherine Deese in Washington, reporting for AM.
In Britain, experts are warning the UK's National Health Service is in danger of being overwhelmed, with more hospital admissions for coronavirus than at the peak of the first wave earlier this year. There are tens of thousands of people being treated in English hospitals, and there's been another daily record for new cases, just over 53,000 people. Europe correspondent Linton Besser sent this report.
We are doing all that we can, but I do think that if we continue with the current rate of admissions, we are very, very close to becoming overwhelmed.
That's Sonia Adesara, an emergency physician in London, and her warning is being echoed at the highest levels. Professor Andrew Haywood, a scientific advisor to the government, has told the BBC that Britain is entering what he described as a dangerous new phase of the pandemic, and that the country needs decisive and early national action to prevent a catastrophe in January and February. He's one of a number of voices now calling for a delayed reopening for UK schools, which are scheduled to resume as early as Monday. The government wants a mass testing program in schools to help them stay open. But Nicola Mason, the principal of a school near Birmingham, said it's been difficult finding people to help set that up.
Things have just come through to schools very late, and I think it's certainly led to a lot of stress and a lot of panic over the Christmas holidays to try to get people recruited.
In response, the government has flagged a plan to use the military to help with the testing campaign. But the Ministry of Defence has said that help will come in the form of online and phone tutorials for school staff trying to set up their own testing regimes. Perhaps unsurprisingly, principals are not convinced. Here's Jeff Barton from the Association of School Leaders.
We are educationists. We can support the government. It's good we're going to have some members of the army, but for 3,500 secondary schools, 1,500 troops doing webinars probably isn't the government response that we were looking for.
The chief executive of the National Health Service, Simon Stevens, paid tribute to his frontline staff overnight in an end-of-year message tinged with sadness.
Many of us will have lost family, friends, colleagues, and at a time of year when normally we would be celebrating, a lot of people are understandably feeling anxious, frustrated and tired. And now, of course, again, we're back in the eye of the storm with this second wave of coronavirus sweeping Europe and indeed this country.
More than 70,000 people have died in Britain within 28 days of a diagnosis of COVID-19. That's the official figure. But the UK's Office of National Statistics records there are many, many thousands more who have the words COVID-19 inscribed on their death certificates. And the numbers could become even more grim in the weeks and months ahead. Despite a series of escalating lockdowns over the past 6 weeks, the number of positive tests and hospital admissions continues to soar. The vaccines are being rolled out, but any return to normality for Britain is still a long way off. In London, this is Linton Besser reporting for AM.
Well, as we heard a little earlier, California is a major hotspot for the virus in the US, and the situation is particularly dire in Los Angeles County. Hospitals are turning away ambulances, and the number of COVID patients inside ICUs is breaking records. Dr. Brad Spellberg is the chief medical officer at the LA County University of Southern California Medical Center, a 600-bed public hospital on LA's east side. I spoke with him earlier. Dr. Spellberg, are LA hospitals, including your own, now overwhelmed?
We've been getting crushed by a surge of COVID patients for well over a month at this point. And many hospitals in the county are on internal disaster, are closed to ambulance traffic. There are hospitals that have literally run out of oxygen. So, yes, I would say the situation is becoming overwhelming.
Are there any beds available in intensive care units?
There are very few left across the county. On any given day at my hospital, there typically, when we walk in the morning, are no beds available. This morning, as an example, we had 6 people in the emergency department who needed an ICU bed, and we had no beds that could house them. This is a daily battle where we're trying to open beds and free beds up, and it's like playing musical beds. And you're just trying to bail the water out because it keeps spilling over the levee, and you're just trying to keep up.
I've read some reports that hospitals are having to turn away ambulances or even having to put patients in gift shops.
There was a news story about a local hospital in LA that is housing some patients in its former gift shop. Most hospitals now are having to spill care into areas that they normally would not have provided care, or at least that level of care. And yes, many hospitals, if not most, are on some form of ambulance diversion, at least intermittently. When you get these surges of patients, you need to say to the ambulances, we need a few hours to catch up. The volume is shocking.
You say the volume is shocking. You've seen a lot in your time as a doctor. Is this something that you never thought that you were going to experience?
Well, I never thought about it per se. This is certainly worse than anything I've ever experienced. In 2009, there was the global influenza pandemic for H1N1, and hospitals were very stressed at that point, but it was never anything remotely close to this. Nobody on earth has seen anything like this since 1918, 1919, and back then, hospitals were very different. There was no such thing as an ICU. So in the modern era, this has never happened.
It's such a grim situation. Are your staff becoming fatigued?
Becoming would have been the appropriate tense 4 months ago. We're exhausted. We're all exhausted. Everybody's on edge. We're all exhausted. I work in the safety net. This is a familiar concept in Australia, where you have a rich network of district-controlled public hospitals. In the U.S., there's not such a robust network, but L.A. County still has its own safety net of public hospitals, and I work in the largest of them. Our people know why they come to work. We're the safety net. We're the largest trauma center in the Western U.S. They come to work with a mission. At some point, the exhaustion, you know why you're here, but it's like, how long can this last? How much more can we take?
Do you think anything's going to change anytime soon?
Well, early read is we might be starting to see a flattening of cases over the last week or two in L.A. County. The question is there going to be a new surge triggered by Christmas and New Year's in the next 1 to 2 weeks? If there is, we're going to end up like New York was in April, or Italy or Spain experienced earlier in the year. If cases plateau, we will have escaped with our, just razor-thin margin, have escaped a huge public health catastrophe.
Well, Dr. Spellberg, thank you very much for taking time out of your day to talk with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Brad Spellberg is the Chief Medical Officer at the LA County University of Southern California Medical Center. You're listening to AM, and it's 19 minutes past 8. More doctors have added their voices to concerns about patient care being compromised because of state border restrictions. The Australian Medical Association has called for a dedicated emergency route to be reinstated on the border between New South Wales and Queensland. It comes after a border doctor told AM yesterday that heart attack patients had missed out on crucial treatment. Annie Guest reports from Brisbane.
1 week in to the latest border restrictions, and the impact on patients is worrying Dr. Danielle McMullen, the Australian Medical Association's New South Wales president.
We hold significant concerns that nearly a year into this pandemic, we're still hearing concerns about delays to patient care. Those communities rely on interstate transport for their medical care, including their urgent medical care.
A Gold Coast paramedic has told AM ambulances and patients are facing delays crossing the border, jeopardising care because an emergency route has not been reinstated during the latest restrictions. The AMA's Dr. McMullen says it's not good enough.
Certainly it did seem to improve some of the access problems last time around. And so there should be protocols in place that when borders are closed, that all those same supports also come back in place each time.
Queensland Police have announced an additional general checkpoint, but emergency services must call ahead to request priority access. A border doctor told AM yesterday that during the initial border closure earlier this year, up to 22 Tweed Hospital heart attack patients missed out on crucial treatment on the Gold Coast.
My understanding was phone calls from Tweed Hospital about transferring patients to a treatment hospital, that the permission to transfer was declined because the receiving hospital wasn't sure that the patient would be allowed to cross the border. And that delay was what ended with a fatal outcome.
It's a claim denied by the New South Wales Health Department, which says there's been no increase in unexpected patient deaths at the Tweed Hospital because of the border closure. And Queensland Health says essential emergency care has not been denied to those who've needed it. Here's the AMA's Dr. McMullen again.
Those population groups really need to be a priority over the next year or so that we're likely to see borders opening and closing.
Meanwhile, the New South Wales Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, is reminding people she opposes interstate restrictions.
Border issues shouldn't really be there unless they absolutely have to be. And we just ask all governments to consider the decisions they take on compassionate grounds.
New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian ending Annie Guest's report. A senior Taiwanese politician is calling for greater economic and security ties with Australia to counter the threat posed by China. Here's defence correspondent Andrew Green.
During the festive season, Taiwan's population has been treated to a very different Christmas lights display. This week, the country's National Chung-Shan Institute of Science and Technology fired weapons in what's believed to be an anti-missile intercept test. It's another example of the growing military tensions in the Taiwan Strait.
We are facing China's threat for decades.
Wang Qingyu is a senior member of Taiwan's governing Democratic Progressive Party. He's calling on countries such as Australia to expand economic and security links with Taiwan to counter China's increasing assertiveness towards a territory it claims as its own.
If we have a chance to cooperate, some kind of cooperation in some area, that would be a good direction for these two countries. We need a bilateral relationship.
Australia doesn't formally recognise Taiwan as a sovereign state, but has recently increased unofficial cooperation in areas such as combating the COVID-19 pandemic. During a tour of Western Australia's HMAS Stirling Naval Base on Tuesday, Defence Minister Linda Reynolds acknowledged growing military tensions between China and Taiwan were of concern.
Australia is observing very closely what's happening not just around Taiwan but also in the South China Sea. We would always call on people to exercise caution and restraint and work together to ensure that all nations abide by international law.
Liberal colleague and former Army General Jim Molan fears some form of military confrontation between China and Taiwan could soon eventuate, and also believes now is the time for Australia to increase cooperation with the democratic state.
I think we can do a lot more with Taiwan. Apart from trade, I think we can encourage the United States and our own military and our own foreign affairs and trade people to prepare not just for the easy case, but for the worst case.
Wang Qingyu says an important step to deter China would be to allow Taiwan to join security networks that include Australia and its allies.
Your role in this region is increasing. That's good. And we have many chances to have dialogue with Australian officials.
That's Wang Tingyu, the co-chair of Taiwan's Foreign Affairs and National Defence Committee, ending Andrew Green's report. Growing up in out-of-home care isn't easy, but forcing teenagers out of the system as soon as they legally reach adulthood creates its own set of challenges. State-funded arrangements for most young people in foster, kinship and residential care end at 18. Advocates say there should be an option to extend out-of-home care to 21. While some states and territories have begun to shift, there's concern that that change isn't happening fast enough, as Bridget Fitzgerald reports.
Shelley Farmer's sitting with her two young daughters on their living room floor south of Perth as they tug at decorations hanging on the Christmas tree. Her eldest, Jasmine's, discovered the spare box of baubles and is happily rolling them across the floor. As their mother watches on, she reflects on how different things were when she was growing up.
So I first came into care when I was 11 years old. Up until the age of 18, I have moved to 8 or 9 different homes and I went to 5 different high schools.
It was a tumultuous and at times traumatic childhood.
There really isn't a time that I was able to recall someone saying, what would you like to do? Where do you feel safest?
Despite the difficulty of being in out-of-home care, the 24-year-old Noongar woman remembers the fear she felt when she had to leave.
After I graduated high school, so my birthday's in January, so I had until I was 18 to be moved out. I remember thinking, where am I going to live? Who am I going to live with? How am I going to live? I was fortunate enough to have a full-time job by the time I was 18, and I moved in with someone who I'd just met, maybe 2 weeks, just met in the workplace.
The state says we'll bring you in, we'll remove you from the abuse and neglect, we'll care for you. But at the turn of your 18th birthday, our care, our support to you formally will end.
Paul McDonald's the chair of the Home Stretch campaign, which works to get states and territories to extend out-of-home care provisions to young people from 18 to 21. From the 1st of January, Victoria will allow all young people in out-of-home care, either foster, kinship or residential, to extend support up until the age of 21, though it is optional and if they wish to leave, they may do so. While it's the most significant reform in extending out-of-home care nationally, other states have also begun to change the rules.
Good progress by South Australia and Tasmania, in which they've provided those in home-based care, that's foster care and kinship care, through to 21 for that provision, and West Australia conducting trials in relation to extended care to 21.
Paul McDonald says he wants to see every state and territory permanently extend all care arrangements to 21.
Whenever care is extended by a further 3 years, we'll halve the homeless rates for this cohort. And why that is so significant is that of all Australia's homeless youth population, 62% are care leavers.
While she's now found stability in a good job and a family of her own, Shelley Farmer says she wishes she had more support as a young adult.
I remember things like I would get my employment contract and I would know nothing about these things called entitlements or annual leave. And I remember wishing at the time, I just sort of wish I had somebody to sit down and talk me through it. When I got my driver's license, I didn't even know about insuring a car. And for years I drove around with an uninsured car. And if I knew that I could get insurance, I would have lived a lot easier.
She hopes there'll be a permanent raise to care age around the country.
It will provide them safety, it will provide them with security, and that comes down to medical, financial, emotional, all that sort of support they will need. When you're 18 to 21, that's a perfect opportunity to really cement what you wish to do with your life or do with your well-being.
That's Shelley Farmer, who used to be in care and is now a mother of two, ending Bridget Fitzgerald's report. And that is AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Kim Landers.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.